Welcome to Power Play. I'm Evan Solomon. On our program today, showdown over the vote count.
This is a major fraud in our nation. We want the law to be used in a proper manner. So we'll be going to the U.S. Supreme Court. We want all voting to stop. We don't want them to find any ballots at 4 o'clock in the morning and add them to the list.
That's Trump, and then the Biden pushback.
We will watch. We will continue to defend Canadians.
A lot of- to reach 270 electoral votes needed to win the presidency. I'm not here to declare that we've won, but I am here to report when the count is finished, we believe we will be the winners.
Excuse that bit of Trudeau, but that's Joe Biden there, of course. When will the vote finally be decided in the United States of America or the disunited states of America? Is there really any evidence of voter fraud, as Donald Trump is now alleging? Where is the radioactive rhetoric all heading? We'll bring you lots of perspective on that. The former U.S. ambassador to Canada, Bruce Hayman, again will join us. He's got an inside look at where the Biden campaign is at right now. We're watching the rolling vote total throughout the program. Now, this is important. Across the bottom of your screen right now, you can see the latest standings as they are right now. As we see it, Biden carrying 247 Electoral College votes, Donald Trump holding 213. Again, it all comes down to a few key battleground states that we are watching and the count there. Take a look at this. Georgia, of course, leaning towards Donald Trump. Michigan leading towards Joe Biden. Nevada could go Biden. Pennsylvania, toss up. That could be the tail of the tape. North Carolina leading towards Trump right now. So where is it all heading? In a moment, we'll get the latest on all these tight races. And as ever, we'll focus on how this impacts Canada and on you. Check this out.
We will watch. We will continue to defend Canadians.
A lot of Canadians woke up today pretty worried. I'm pretty afraid. For a lot of reasons, people wanted to see him lose. I've made that really clear.
Thank you very much. Please sit. Thank you.
So there you saw the NDP leader, Jagmeet Singh, not mincing words or practicing typical Canadian diplomacy. He wants Donald Trump out. Is that a prudent thing to say for a Canadian political leader? Jagmeet Singh joins us to let us know why he's doing that. Then, defending an election in court.
This meticulous process is all about and focused on ensuring every absentee ballot is counted accurately.
Every piece of data is publicly available. And so there's no opportunity to add additional votes to the tally.
Amidst allegations of fraud, officials insist the vote counts are going according to plan. It's all transparent. But again, Donald Trump is saying, no, it's not. How is that going to play out? We have a legal expert to explain it all to you and get you the facts. This is Power Play. Let's get to the players. So here we are. Call it the day after. 150 million Americans have cast their vote. That is a record. It's extraordinary. But it's still not over, and it's not over by a long shot. Neither Joe Biden nor Donald Trump has reached that magic number of 270 electoral votes. That's what they need to be the next president of the United States. Just minutes ago, though, Joe Biden and his vice presidential running mate gave a press conference where Joe Biden argued that the vote count will soon, he says, hand him a victory. Check out what he just said.
In Michigan, we lead by over 35,000 votes, and it's growing. A substantially bigger margin than President Trump won Michigan in 2016. Michigan will complete its vote soon, maybe as early as today. And I feel very good about Pennsylvania. Virtually all the remaining ballots to be counted were cast by mail. And we've been winning 78% of the votes by mail in Pennsylvania.
So that was about 45 minutes ago. Unlike Donald Trump early in the morning, Joe Biden did not there declare victory, but he says he believes the count will eventually give him victory. He has a simple demand: count the votes. Now, let us contrast that with Donald Trump. It's about 3 a.m. Eastern time. Donald Trump and his family held a press conference in the White House. He not only declared victory, he demanded that the votes stop being counted, and he made this allegation that this was all about mass voter fraud. I want you to see what he said.
I want to thank the American people for their tremendous support. Millions and millions of people voted for us tonight. And a very sad group of people is trying to disenfranchise that group of people. And we won't stand for it. We will not stand for it.
And literally just minutes ago, Donald Trump's lawyer, Rudy Giuliani, held a press conference. He alleged there could be mass fraud in Pennsylvania. He was in Pennsylvania with Donald Trump's son. He alleged that dead people would be voting. He alleged the Democrats are trying to steal the election. But again, we haven't seen any evidence of that yet. Again, let me just reiterate. The argument to count the votes is not a partisan position. It's not Republican or Democrat. Counting the votes after an election is the American system. It is not fraud. It is not stealing. It is simply counting legal votes that American citizens have cast before Election Day. Now, I should say, those votes, if there's any issues, can be legally scrutinized by Republicans and Democrats. They can send people to monitor that. It is their right. They can and they should do that if they have concern. But that doesn't mean the votes shouldn't be counted. You don't stop the 100-meter dash at the 90-meter mark. If you're in the lead, you go to the finish line. It is the same with counting votes. Still, the Trump camp is demanding recounts or legal challenges to stop this process. And in fact, Donald Trump is tweeting that the vote is illegal and it's got to be taken away. So, a lot going on. It's literally going on as we speak. So let's go on the ground right now to Pennsylvania. And Abby is joining us right now. Abby Kuga-Thiessen is joining us now. Abby, you're there at the Biden camp. Man, Joe Biden just came out. Give us a sense of what they're saying and what they believe this count will show.
Yeah, as you mentioned, we heard from Vice President Joe Biden a short while ago. It was very statesmanlike, as he has sounded yesterday as well. And he basically said every vote must be counted. He didn't declare victory like Donald Trump did, rather in the early hours of Wednesday. He said that every vote must be counted. The American people have voted in overwhelming numbers, a record in over a century, and that the will of the people must be what decides who the next president is. It's not about what Donald Trump says. So we're certainly looking at the different paths to victory for Joe Biden. He's starting to build back that blue wall. He flipped Wisconsin. It looks like he's about to do the same in Michigan. And here in Pennsylvania, the count in Philadelphia particularly is just happening up the street from where we are. And we're waiting for those results. But again, the results could take some time. We might not know until Friday how Pennsylvania unfolds. But the way things are going right now, Joe Biden might not even need Pennsylvania. If he flips Michigan, if he flips Arizona, holds on to that lead he had in Nevada, it's game over for Donald Trump.
Yeah, and we're just looking, Abby, right now at the numbers out of Pennsylvania. It's very close. Again, it's a long road for Joe Biden to climb back. He alleges he can do it. But, Abby, I think it's important for people to appreciate he may not need Pennsylvania, as you say. If he gets Nevada, Arizona, Wisconsin, and Michigan, he still reaches that magic number of 270. If he doesn't, then he's got to go. It might all come down to Pennsylvania. What's the timeline to get all those, Abby?
Yeah, the timeline we've heard from experts and election officials here in Pennsylvania, they've been saying for weeks, we're not going to know on Election Day, which is exactly what happened. And they said we might not know until Friday. And that's because a recent order from the Supreme Court said that the state of Pennsylvania can keep counting mail-in ballots postmarked up until Election Day. They can continue counting until November 6th, which is Friday. And they do need that extra time because Pennsylvania doesn't have a history of mail-in and absentee voting. This is the first election that they've allowed it without having to provide a reason, and more than 2.2 million people cast their ballots that way. And so it's going to take some time. It takes longer to count those ballots. We also know that Democrats, registered Democrats, mostly applied for those ballots, which is why yesterday in the evening we saw Pennsylvania going towards Trump because most of his supporters voted in person. But we're seeing now the surge, as we did in Wisconsin and Michigan, with regard to the mail-in ballots from Democratic voters who support Joe Biden.
Abby, let's turn to the Trump camp. Donald Trump is tweeting a lot now, and I think we're going to throw up some tweets, and I want to get your perspective on what he's saying. And if we can just show these tweets, Donald Trump is saying, we have claimed for electoral vote purposes here. He's tweeted Pennsylvania, which won't allow legal observers, he alleges, the state of Georgia, the state of North Carolina, one of which has a big Trump lead. Additionally, we hereby claim the state of Michigan, if in fact there was a large number of secretly dumped ballots, has been widely reported. So these are tweets just minutes ago from Donald Trump. So how are they reacting? What's their strategy here, Abby?
This is a president who's been casting doubt on the election results before Election Day. He was attacking mail-in ballots as being somehow being fraudulent, that, you know, Democratic states in particular were up to no good, that if he lost, that it would be rigged. So he was already laying the groundwork for that. And we heard him say that around 2 o'clock in the morning, where he said he thinks he's going to win Pennsylvania, and that where are all these ballots coming from? Well, all these ballots came from American citizens who, you know, cast them in a valid and legitimate way. It's just taking some time to count it. And we know how fond the president is of lawsuits, and he's filed a couple in Pennsylvania already. He's going into Michigan to try to stop the count there. So certainly they're throwing everything in the kitchen sink in hopes of stopping the count, because for some reason they seem to think that they might not win if they continue to count. And that probably has a lot to do with the mail-in ballots, as I mentioned.
Abby, I don't know how much sleep you got last night. I didn't get a lot, but this is a marathon, and you might be there for a long time. Great work, of course, and there's lots of news breaking all the time. Abby, thanks so much. I really appreciate you giving us the latest today. Thanks. All right, that's Abby Kugathasan there doing just phenomenal work. I want to bring in right now as we look at all these states calculating their votes. There's narrow paths to victory. Let's stay with the Biden camp, because Joe Biden has just come out and said he thinks he's got a path to victory. The former U.S. ambassador to Canada, Bruce Hayman, who's always been good enough to come on this show, is very close to the Biden camp, been on the calls with the Biden camp. The Associated Press, I should say, has just declared Biden a winner in Wisconsin. He seems to be very confident in Michigan. I know some sources are saying he may won that. What do the Biden camp now think, Bruce Hayman, their path to victory is? And we
Wisconsin.
Don't have Bruce Hayman's video. Oh, here we go. Bruce, start again. Okay, go ahead.
Okay.
Go ahead. No, we got you, Bruce. Go ahead.
Okay.
Go ahead.
So we are exactly where you left off. Wisconsin, Michigan, which CNN and others just declared for Biden. And then we go to Arizona, which I think is imminent. And then we go to Nevada. He has enough votes. He does not need Pennsylvania. But Pennsylvania does look good. And I think, as Abby described in just this prior segment, these ballots are still coming in because they were put in the mailbox on Election Day. And that is still valid for the next few days. And so there may be additional votes still coming in, which I believe there will be, especially since the Postal Service is under the court order to try to get those ballots back. So Joe's in really good shape.
Well, okay. Mind you, the Trump camp and Rudy Giuliani is out there saying, we have never seen these. Our scrutineers have not had an opportunity to overlook these. He said, I don't know if Joe Biden himself sent in dozens of his own vote. We haven't seen this. There's lots of allegation in Pennsylvania, in Wisconsin. They want recounts in Michigan. That there's funny business. There's fraud. What is the Biden camp's response?
The only funny business is Donald Trump and these protestations. Look, the guy, this is just what we've seen for the last 3 3/4 years. You know, on everything he's done, he has this twisted mindset, and he has telegraphed this even before the election started, that either he will win or it is a manipulated election. And he talked
but
about
hold on,
this.
But hold on. And I get that. And I get there's a lot of politicking. But I just want to be specific. Let's just go through his allegations. I'll read his tweet.
Sure.
In the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania, they will not allow legal observers. True or false?
I don't know the answer to that question, whether that's legal in Pennsylvania or not to let outside observers in. So I can't comment on that, and I'm not a lawyer. Bottom line is, all the votes are going to get counted, and when they're all counted, it's likely in Pennsylvania that Joe will win, but Joe does not need Pennsylvania.
Okay, what happens if Joe Biden wins this path to victory? He wins Arizona, he wins Nevada. He wins Wisconsin and he wins Michigan as the votes are counted. I don't want these called recounts. These are just counts. But Donald Trump does not accept the result. Then what happens in the United States of America? Joe Biden says he's won. Donald Trump says he's won. What's next?
I think that the folks in the Republican Party will recognize the importance of the valid vote. You saw Marco Rubio's comments today. You saw Chris Christie's comments today. Let the votes happen. Count the votes. The winner will be the winner. And it's against their interest to invalidate the vote because they all have elections and many congressional seats. They don't want those reopened up and looked at. So, look, it's a slippery slope. I think that we'll count the votes at the end of the day. The Biden team believes they have the votes to get to 270 and potentially beyond. We didn't even talk about Georgia, but that's still in the mix in a big way. And so, look, that's the path we're on. But Joe Biden did not declare victory like Donald Trump did. And so we'll see over the next couple of days when these states are called.
When? What's the timeline, Ambassador Hayman? You say the next couple of days. When could we know? What's the fastest and what's the longest?
I think we could know tomorrow. It's possible. Both in Arizona. Now, remember, we have Michigan called. We have Wisconsin called. We could get Arizona called early tomorrow or sometime tomorrow. And now Nevada says, while they were going to say something on, you know, later Thursday, but maybe we'll just, it'll be there. Maybe we'll see it earlier. I think tomorrow is potentially the day, but it could go to Friday.
Could go to Friday. Just finally, as a Democrat, you guys were talking about big numbers, 350, 400 votes. Do the Democrats have to look in a cracked mirror and see a reflection and say, hey, from Hillary Clinton to Joe Biden, this, whatever we're doing, our argument about Donald Trump is not working. Whatever you think about Donald Trump, he's increased his vote. He hasn't decreased his vote. And the Democrat menu is not bringing in the kind of customers. I know there's a lot more voters, but it has not changed the electoral map the way you guys thought. Why not?
I think we're missing something. I think you're absolutely right. And I think the opportunity set starts with the president. And Joe Biden's language today talking about no red states or blue states, just the United States, and he is going to be president of all the people in the United States. You know, so I think it has to start at the White House. But Democrats have a lot of introspection to do right now and figure out what it is they're missing and why is it so many Americans find what Donald Trump was proposing appealing. And we need to address that. I think you're right.
Bruce Hayman, again, there's a path to victory still for Donald Trump. There's certainly a path for Joe Biden. It's absolutely not over, but always a pleasure to have you. You spent a lot of time with us, and I appreciate it very much. Thanks, Bruce Hayman.
It's a pleasure.
Here in Canada, this is what Prime Minister Justin Trudeau had to say about the U.S. election today. They're steering clear of it. Check this out.
As everyone knows, there is an electoral process underway in the United States. We are, of course, following it carefully and will continue to as the day and days unfold.
Jagmeet Singh, the leader of the NDP, took a very different tone, denouncing President Trump. He tweeted, vote him out, after saying Donald Trump has, quote, fanned the flames of hatred and division. He said it is a moral imperative to speak out against Donald Trump. Should a federal political leader in Canada be taking that kind of stance against a leader of Canada's largest trading partner? Well, let's find out. Joining me now is NDP leader Jagmeet Singh. Mr. Singh, is it prudent for someone like you, who is running to be the Prime Minister of Canada, to speak about the President of the United States like that? A man, we don't even know if he's still going to be the President, but there's certainly a chance he will be. Is that prudent?
Well, it's not about being prudent, and it's not normal. Normally, it wouldn't make sense to weigh in with such detail. But what President Trump has done on any level, on any measure, is so not normal. It's so beyond the realm of normalcy. His complete abject failure to respond to COVID-19, his dismissal and rejection of basic science, his dangerous suggestions of cures that would hurt people, his treatment of other people, his divisive politics, his white supremacy and failure to denounce it. In fact, his inflaming and encouraging of white supremacy, and his real danger that he has placed not just Americans, not just Canadians, but the entire world with his mishandling of COVID-19 has actually made it a threat to the entire world. In that specific context, if you're good friends with someone, you got to call out when there's someone that's a bully.
So do you actually think
call
Justin
out someone
Trudeau
that's in a
should
bad relationship?
Call... Would you actually think it's prudent for Justin Trudeau to use that kind of language?
Well, there was many times when Prime Minister Trudeau should have said what President Trump said is wrong and just rejected it. He is flaming conspiracy theories. He is not willing to outright dismiss things like QAnon. Like, there are certain things you have to just say, hey, I'm a good friend with the United States. You know, Canada has a long relationship. We're good friends. We're trading partners. As a good friend, what was just said is just totally wrong. And use the credibility that we have as a nation to call that out. You've got to do that if you're a good friend. You have to.
Well, you know, it's atypical for a political leader running to be the prime minister. We had two foreign ministers on, former foreign ministers of Canada, Peter MacKay and John Manley, on. They said it was imprudent of you to do that. That it shows that you're just, you'll never be the prime minister, because if you're the prime minister and you talk about Donald Trump, how would you work with him if you had to as the leader?
You got to stand up to a bully. You can't back down from a bully. They're going to do what they want. I mean, at the end of the day, President Trump brought in all sorts of illegal tariffs that were clearly not going to be held up in a court of law. He did all sorts of inappropriate things, and you don't get anywhere from backing down. You got to stand up, use the tools that we have, use the court system that we have to fight things. At the end of the day, the Canadian president, prime minister, has to be willing to stand up to the United States if there is something going on that's going to hurt Canadians. You have to be willing to stand up and say something is wrong. Canadians expect that our prime minister is willing to stand up. But ideally, we want to find ways where we can work together. There's ways to work together.
Right.
But with someone like Donald Trump, you have to call out the heinous and just brazenly wrong things that he has done. There's no other way about it.
I mean, you're meddling in their election, saying don't vote for them. So let me just ask you. You said Donald Trump makes the world a more dangerous place, and I hope to see him lose this election. I wonder, does this apply to other leaders? Let me just give you an example. President Xi of China. You know his track record. You know what he's done. You know, talk about the two Canadians in prison, Tibet, the Uyghurs. Is he making the world a more dangerous place? For example, would you call out President Xi of China the same way you've just called out President Trump?
Well, we are directly sharing borders with a country where over 200,000 people have died because of COVID-19. And we've got a neighboring country where the president has made the idea of wearing a mask a political question instead of a science-based question. He has challenged basic tenets of science to deal with a global pandemic. He has put into question those things. He has inflamed and said clearly to organizations like the Proud Boys to stand back and stand by.
Like, there's a point when someone is, Trump, but
someone is so ludicrously wrong that it just goes beyond... Okay. At this point, it goes beyond that type of lens, and it just becomes.
But let me just ask you: you're a political leader.
For us to say to him, "Hey, like, you can't say those things, and those things are wrong, and anyone's hearing those things, that's not true." And it's important for our world leaders to be able to say, "Hey, when President Trump says you should use bleach on the coronavirus, like, that's wrong, and that's ludicrous that he said."
Okay, but hang on.
There's things that he said that requires us to actually come out and be very clear.
I get you don't like Donald Trump, but I'm just trying to figure out what the standard is. You can't defend the record of President Xi. I could give you a long list of human rights abuses there. So let me just ask you, if you call out Donald Trump, are you going to call out Xi of China, Erdogan of Turkey? Like, is this what you feel that you can just call out and get involved in the domestic affairs of other countries? If that's the case, that's fine. I'm not judging it. But if you do it to Trump, will you do it to other leaders?
Well, if the question is about calling out human rights violations, of course. Canada has a long history of calling out human rights violations. And of course, the treatment of the Uyghur is horrendous. And the heavy-handed tactics and silencing of dissent in Turkey is something that many international human rights experts have spoken out about. And that's important to do. We have a role as global citizens to speak about the rights of people around the world. That's completely appropriate. And there is a unique scenario of what Donald Trump has said, his assertions that he's made, and the fact that we are neighbors, that rises to the level of the necessity of saying, hey, that is wrong,
right?
That is a lie, that is a fabrication, that is false. When he speaks about, you know, just denying basic things around science, around fighting COVID-19, politicizing wearing a mask, politicizing the scientific response to a disease. Like, these are things that have to be called out. There's no other way around it.
All right.
The treatment of kids in cages.
All right. Unfortunately, I got to leave it there. But, man, you are calling them out. I'll give you that. Ms. Jagmeet Singh, I really appreciate you always taking the time to join us on the program. Thank you, sir.
Of course.
All right. That's Jagmeet Singh, the leader of the NDP. And as he says, He's calling them out. We want to hear from you. Do you have thoughts on the program, the election, our leaders in Ottawa? Reach out through social media on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and email. Here's all the ways you can reach us. Coming up on the program, this.
This is a fraud on the American public. This is an embarrassment to our country.
Claiming victory in election fraud. Can Donald Trump really legally challenge this? A law scholar from Yale joins us next with the facts. Stay with us. Welcome back to the program. The Republicans and Donald Trump are trying to cast doubt on the legally cast ballots of U.S. citizens simply because they haven't been counted yet. They're already laying the groundwork for a legal dispute in places like Pennsylvania and Michigan and Wisconsin. They filed lawsuits arguing that voters whose mail-in ballots have some deficiency, like a missing signature, should not be able to cast provisional ballots instead, and that those were sent that way should be ditched. Remember, they're also challenging the state's extension of deadline for mail-in ballots. The Trump campaign has filed a lawsuit today in Michigan to halt counting of votes until they get access to polling stations to observe the opening of ballots. He also wants to recount the votes in Wisconsin. So is there any merit to all this? Let's try to break it down. Like, what are the facts here? We're going to now bring in Professor Bruce Ackerman. He's the author and the Sterling Professor of Law and Political Science at the Yale Law School. He also happens to be a friend of the U.S. Supreme Court Chief Justice John Roberts, and he very rarely weighs in on these issues, not a partisan. So, sir, it's a great pleasure to have you here. When you heard the President of the United States last night say, "I declare victory, I don't want any more votes to count," whatever that meant, and that there's massive voter fraud now, just... Again, this is what you do. What was your reaction to that? How do you parse that?
Well, it is not the crucial decision maker in this affair is not Donald Trump. It is the courts and the Supreme Court of the United States. And there is no chance whatever that the Supreme Court at this moment will intervene to eliminate ballots or supervise. Obvious for one thing, it takes time to actually consider arguments and thoughtfully resolve questions one way or the other. There is no time. Rather, the vote count will proceed. The electoral authorities of each state determines to be the winner will be the winner unless it is successfully challenged before the Supreme Court of the United States. Now, the crucial point here is that three members of the present court actually were litigating in Bush against Gore in 2000 on the side of President Bush. This was perfectly legitimate at the time. John Roberts, Kavanaugh, and Justice Barrett. These three were engaged in advocacy. I know, as you mentioned, I was a representative for Al Gore before the legislature. The Florida legislature. I only do this on matters of the first importance. This is not what I do for my time. I write books. What we have is if the court were to intervene later on in 3 or 4 or 5 or 6 weeks, will three engaged participants in Bush v. Gore actually invalidate close vote counts on behalf of President Biden so as to permit President Trump to have a second term? Well, I am Justice Roberts, Chief Justice Roberts, and myself, clerk for the same leading jurist of the last generation, Henry Friendly, different times, but we know each other for 35 years. And I, not for the last two or three, I haven't been in Washington too much recently, and I can tell you, John Roberts, I disagree with him on a lot of things on the merits, but he is a person who is profoundly dedicated to the proposition that the Supreme Court of the United States should be above politics. It should not become merely another partisan organ. At the same time, however, four of the very conservative justices have already moved well beyond Bush against Gore and indicated an enthusiasm for intervention. So the crucial question is going to be Justice Barrett. John Roberts, I'm imagining, will be pointing out to Justice Barrett that if she joins the majority and intervenes and awards Donald Trump a second term, she will be profoundly compromising and make it really plainly illegitimate to do what she really is. It's important for her to do, which is not this, but overruling Roe against Wade invalidating the Health Care Act and things of this kind. Does she really want to delegitimate her own role, especially when Donald Trump has said, I'm putting her on the court so that we have a fifth judge? The question is, will she turn? Will she listen to John Roberts or will she listen to the other four? This is a crucial tragedy of the American Republic, that its future as a law-abiding republic is dependent upon the decision of one person.
And that's why the Supreme Court is so important. Unfortunately, I've got to take a break here. But Professor Ackerman, first of all, that was thank you so much. I really appreciate that. That's the perspective we need to hear, and I appreciate you giving it to us. Thank you, sir, very much.
Let's say thank you.
All right. I should tell our viewers, by the way, Donald Trump is not going to address the nation tonight. He did at 3 a.m. today, but he won't do it tonight. Meantime, a nation on edge or an entire planet. Check this out.
It's the future of the country, and I think we all need to pay attention.
Ballots are still being counted in a number of swing states. What is going to happen? The press gallery is going to dig into that next. Stay with us. Welcome back. Marathon continues. It all comes down to a couple of battleground states. Hundreds of thousands of votes are left to be counted, maybe even more. We're stuck in a waiting game. Both sides claim victory or a path to victory. All right. What should you be looking for right now? Let's bring in the press gallery. Stephanie Levitz is a reporter with the Canadian Press. Mary Scott Greenwood, partner with Crestview Strategy in Washington in the U.S., Ovik Roy, the president of the Foundation for Research on Equal Opportunity and former advisor to Mitt Romney. Well, everybody, good to see you're up and going around. Ovik, I'll start with you. Donald Trump had that kind of red surge. Now it looks like that surge is starting to pull back. He's starting to challenge the election. Where do we stand right now? What are you looking for, Ovik?
Well, Evan, we can talk about a lot, but there's a couple things that I've talked about on the show consistently over the last several weeks. One is the shy Tory effect. It's clear that there was a shy Tory effect. It wasn't enough to get Trump over the top. I think Biden will win when all is said and done, but it has had an impact on the Senate. It looks like Republicans will retain either 51 or 52 seats out of 100 in the Senate. And by the way, Evan, that means that for the first time since 1884, a newly elected Democratic president will not have a Democratic House and Senate to go along with it, which means Biden will have the slimmest legislative mandate of any new Democratic president in 136 years. So that's really, really significant. The other thing to talk about is Trump's outperformance with Latino and Black voters. Last time around, he won he only got 8% of the Black vote. This time he got 12%. Last time he got 29% of the Latino vote. Now he got 32%. Mm-hmm. There was a county in Texas, Starr County, which Hillary Clinton won by 60%, a border county on the border of Mexico and Texas. Biden only won it by 5%. There was a huge surge in Miami-Dade County, as you probably already talked about, and in these border counties in Texas. We're going to be studying that for a long time. Is there a new coalition or a new realignment of some of these working class voters that are more conservative leaning among minority groups?
Yeah, if Joe Biden does win, by the way, and there's no guarantee, but if he does win, even if he doesn't win the Senate, as they say, a hungry man considered the a crust of bread a feast, I think he'd take it anyway. Scotty, what are you looking for now? Because it was a wild night, but we're kind of in campaign 2.0. What's the path you're looking for now?
Well, that's right, Evan. What I'm looking at now is watching very carefully the secretaries of state. So they're the new stars of CNN and of cable news here in the United States, and they are doing a phenomenal job, a nonpartisan job, of getting through counting these ballots. And let's remember that this is a normal part of our democracy, but it's exacerbated or it takes longer because to count an absentee or a mail-in ballot is actually kind of a 3 or 4 step process as opposed to, you know, a election day ballot. Just because it's in two envelopes, you've got to sort it out, all of those things. So the secretaries of state are doing an amazing job, and we're getting to know them. They're all different. So we're getting to know the referees in this game a little bit more than we thought we would. And as long as the votes are counted, you know, democracy will have won. And Ovik's right. A lot of things are different. If Joe Biden wins, he will have won more votes than any president in our history. But without the Senate to go along with it, it's going to be a very, very difficult path for him to accomplish anything. We know how recalcitrant Mitch McConnell and those Senate Republicans are when faced with a Democratic president. So it's going to be very tough. But that's what our system was designed for. We weren't designed for efficiency. We were actually designed to make it hard to get anything done. And that seems to be the path we're on.
Yeah, well, then in that case, I'll give you very high marks. Steph, look, I don't know who's going to win this. It could be Biden and it could be Trump still. They're both fighting hard. But even if Donald Trump loses, he's overperformed expectations and Biden's frankly underperformed expectations. So Trumpism as a phenomenon, even if the guy loses, is a factor. Does this have an impact, maybe even a spillover impact on how conservatives, Republicans in the U.S., but conservatives here in Canada, view their party, their movement, if the Trumpism movement is alive? It also got more votes than 2016.
One of the things we have to consider and we have to parse out is what Trumpism really is and to what extent it's reflected in Canadian politics right now. I mean, let's just look at the electoral map as we see it, you know, this minute. It'll probably change before I finish uttering this sentence. But if you look at where Trump is strong, right, and where the Republican heartland is in the United States, it's very much continuing to expand in the rural centers. And if you look at Canadian politics, you come up north, you look at Canadian conservative politics, where is that very, very strong? In the rural centers. And so you see some mirroring of the voting public. I mean, of course, there's a lot of distinctions there. But if you just even take a look in the last, I don't know, week or so, 100 years in political days, but Aaron O'Toole, you know, he's been setting forth this new economic agenda, this new vision for the Conservative Party, and he's picking up on some of the themes that Donald Trump used to win election in 2016 and perhaps again now, this idea of standing up for workers, standing up for the common man. And this is a tact, of course, that the Conservatives have tried previously, but Aaron's sort of couching it in a different kind of language that, you know, is provided because Justin Trudeau is the perfect foil. Justin Trudeau is the elite. He is the elite that the Trumpians rail against. He is the elite that the Conservatives rail against here. And so there is some success in the messaging, but what will be interesting to see is how conservatives in Canada read the tea leaves from Trump. Because in the early days of his presidency, his first term, a lot of conservatives here were quick to say, that is not our conservatism. He is not conservative. He's barely even Republican. We are nothing like him. And so what do they do with that? Is there room for a realignment between Canadian conservatives and U.S. Republicans? Or is what's happening in conservative politics in the U.S. completely different than what needs to happen here?
Yeah, and I want to pick up, we're going to take a break and bring in Nick Nanos, our pollster, but because I want to pick up with Ovik and Scotty, this notion of realignments, what's happening. And then, of course, did we all get it wrong because a realignment happened and no one picked up on it? So let's take a break. I'll pull in Nick Nanos. We'll talk about that and where the heck this whole race is going. Guys, stick around. We'll be right back with lots more Power Play. Welcome back to the show. Expectations dashed. Donald Trump did better than anyone thought. Joe Biden didn't do as well as people thought. Were the elites wrong? What happened? Well, a lot of people predicted things and they got it wrong. Were the polls wrong? Were the elites wrong? Let's bring back the press gallery to find out what happened and where it's going in the United States. Steph Levitz for the Canadian Press is here. Mary Scott Greenwood at Crestview Strategy US is here. And we'll bring in now pollster Nick Nanos, the founder of Nanos Research. Let's just start with the polls, Nick. A lot of folks are saying the pollsters got it wrong. This is 2016 all over again. The United States pollsters screwed up. Is that true?
Not quite. Hold your pitchforks, because not all the ballots have been counted. There's still 20 million more ballots that need to be counted. And I would expect that those national polls will probably align with the final outcome, especially when it comes to predicting Biden's national support. The fault or the problem or the black eye had to do with the Electoral College predictions, which were based on state polls. Those were fundamentally had some issues, and especially in a lot of these toss-up states. And as a result, it created a false sense of security, what I'll say, for the Democrats. That said, I would expect, based on the polling that has been done and how these mail ballots, how they'll fall, that Biden will win the Electoral College. And he'll still win the popular vote. It'll just be a tortuous and twisted path for him to victory.
Well, they missed something, Scotty, because Biden folks thought they were going to have a blowout. They didn't. They underestimated Donald Trump. What do you think people are missing about what the American people really want?
I don't think the Biden folks thought they would have a blowout, by the way. I don't think anybody on the inside really thought that. I think people were really worried about a very delicate path to 270 or more. But I do think everybody missed the Senate races. And Ovik talked about it a few moments ago. Nobody did a good job predicting the Black and Latinx vote. And maybe that's because, we don't have enough diversity in the people that are doing the numbers or and spending the money. So I think there's going to be a major postmortem for both parties or all parties and interest groups here about what are we missing about that portion of the population, which, by the way, will be the majority of the United States in a few short years. So it's something that political operatives are going to need to get better at understanding.
Yeah, Steph, what does it tell you that the Democrats were so convinced this would be a repudiation of Donald Trump. It wasn't. If they win, it's a squeaker. And the Republicans thought, no one could vote for Joe Biden. They may lose to him. What does it say that these two solitudes, to use a Canadian expression, are existing in the United States?
I think it raises a lot of deep and profound questions about the myth that is the United States of America and to what extent the country that many people have idealized and mythologized over the last hundreds of years exists in that way anymore. I mean, take even as an example, as Scotty just pointed out, the rising voter bloc among the Latinx population, right? That is a factor now in U.S. electoral politics that sits outside the conception of what American politics are, how they're decided. This idea, too, I think that this national poll, this national picture, elections have consistently been showing us in the last, I'd say, about 10 years or so, that elections are no longer won nationally. They're won very, very locally. Like they say, all politics is local, hyper, hyper local right now. And we have to start wondering about whether we try to paint these national pictures of an electorate when really the answers to who is going to win is found, in the case of the United States, in these tiny counties, in places that most people never hear of except for every 4 years. And that's where the polling, that's where the research needs to go.
Is that right, Nick? What's your take on that?
Well, the thing is that one of the failures we know empirically that happened with American pollsters that happened in 2016 was had to do with modeling related to who they thought was going to vote and who was not going to vote, which is why Clinton in the last days of her campaign were sent to all the wrong states for all the wrong reasons, because there was very poor polling from the Democrats. And I would hazard to say that American pollsters haven't learned from that. The other thing that's quite important is that Canadian pollsters do not do that. We do not put assumptions in our model related to who votes and who doesn't vote, which is probably why explains the Canadian industry has had a much better long-term track record at predicting national elections. So I think this whole concept of trying to figure out who might and might not vote as a statistical model should basically be completely re-examined.
Guys, I got about a minute, and I just want to go to Scotty. Scotty, there is a period of instability there. We're hearing a lot of hot rhetoric from Donald Trump. Just very quickly, are you predicting a peaceful transition, or are we into almost a kind of political insurgency?
No, it's going to be peaceful. And the moment the election outcome is known, which could be as early as tomorrow, Evan, if we know Arizona and Nevada, it's over for Donald Trump. The minute we know that, there will be some litigation, but you will see Republicans backing away from Donald Trump so fast. And I do think that that he is a once in a lifetime kind of, or once in a generation kind of figure. And I do think that if he loses, it will be a repudiation of him, even though the margins aren't what maybe some people thought, and it wasn't a blue tidal wave. Losing is losing, winning is winning, and our system will work, and it will be a peaceful transition, even if there are a few protests here and there.
Well, that's interesting. I'll find out. He calls it a movement. Scotty Greenwood, great to have you. Nick Nanos, great to have you. And of course, Steph Levitz. We're watching closely. Maybe it's decided tomorrow, maybe Friday, or maybe like Bush Gore, that was in mid-December.
Lord help us.
All right, that is your... Oh, don't worry. We got a lot of coffee here. That's your Power Play Day in Politics. Thanks so much for watching. And thanks for your engagement in the political process and the discussion of the great democracies of the world, including ours. We'll be back here in 23 short hours. Remember, hug your loved ones if it's safe to do. Have a great evening. And thanks again for watching.